This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
The target on his left, and now Harahan, brilliant control from the Irish. Wesley 2-0! Harahan with the assist, and Wesley going goal crazy at Carrow Road. Wesley in the right place at the right time.
Welcome to the By Royal Appointment, My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me, two of Prince George's minders, Mr. Chris Budd and Mr. Dan Rogers, who also moonlights with the villaunderground.com. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
Successful trip, taking the young subject to his first Villa game at Norwich.
Went swimmingly.
We only take him to 5-1s now, so...
That's the problem. Prince George is going to think that this is the norm.
That's an interesting baseline expectation for a Villa fan, isn't it?
You see it online, especially around this Liverpool ticket, where suddenly the price is doubled for Liverpool, where some parents are saying, oh yeah, my kid's been enjoying it. Like the back end of last season, I started taking them to games. I'm not taking them to the Liverpool game, though. I don't want to see them crushed with the reality of what supporting Villa actually is. Saying that, I want Liverpool to be unbeaten by the time they get to... I want them 100% by the time they get to Villa Park, because I want Villa to be the team that puts a little dent in their league charge. It's possible.
And we also need we need some revenge for that 6-0.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, big time.
Valentine's Day as well.
Is it?
It was Valentine's Day, wasn't it, with that game?
Oh, I thought you meant...
No,
I was just thinking,
God.
I've got a ticket for Villa-Liverpool, and I thought it was in November, but now it's in Valentine's Day. Is this a Sky thing or something?
No.
Anyway, coming up in the show, we will go through the rather fabulous 5-1 victory at Carrow Road.
It was never in doubt.
You know, we expected 7 or 8, to be honest.
Mm.
Also, we will go through the usual 3 points, where we go back to Iran, our favourite place, where the government have succumbed to the pressure that we've put on them through this podcast.
I mean, we are influencing international policy now.
There's also been movement on the issue of standing at football, and also an innovation from Japan Airlines, which I think can be co-opted by football and could be very useful, especially with Liverpool coming up on the horizon. Anyway, we won't have a Scott Hogan touch count, because the reigning champion, Dan Rogers, can't be tarnished by taking on Chris Budd again, who he's defeated. Is it twice on the trot?
It's turning into Scottish football, you know, where they play each other 4 times in the season, don't
yeah.
they? It was just becoming a merciless whipping, wasn't it?
It's just like Celtic against St Johnston or something, or
Falkirk. Some Parks team, yeah.
So we will summon up a fresh challenger to have a crack at the undisputed Scott Hogan touch count meter challenge
crown.
Are you still there, Chris? Sorry.
You're going to have to rebuild your kudos, Chris. You're going to have to go around the, you know, minor leagues and take on a few other players to build up your cachet before you can get a crack at the champion again.
Yeah, the unions, you're dropping down to the Gary Gardner touch count meter.
No, I'm going to raise the bar by actually going and getting more touches than the actual Scott Hogan for Stoke.
Very good.
Now, to earn a buck, you're going to have to go into the underworld of bare-knuckle Scott Hogan touch count meters. A bit more unsavoury.
At least if we get a run out.
Right, let's go into the 3 points quickly. Before we start, let's try something new.
Ooh.
Who wants to be the guinea pig for this? We're going to call it the Villa Dump.
Okay.
I want you to dump in 60 seconds what you thought of the game and anything that comes to mind, any stats, basically first impressions. So we get 60 seconds of the game before we get into the 3 points. Well, okay, who's volunteering then? This is just a test.
You have a go.
Okay.
60 seconds. Chris Budd, just first impressions in the Villa Dump.
We came out the traps quickly, got the early goal, got on top quickly. I thought Norwich started reasonably brightly. It was even until probably the second goal. Wesley took both his goals really well. Should have buried his penalty. Should have buried the rebound, in fact. Didn't. Good save by their keeper. Yeah. Alas, never mind. Grealish with a really well-crafted goal. Slightly similar to the Rotherham one last season. Me think so. Really good finish. Great assist by Al Ghazi. I think Hourihane, he'll gain confidence from his performance again. Great finish from him. Fantastic finish from Louise yet again. Probably the goal of the game. Target stepped up to the plate again. He was the outball, as we've said in the previous podcasts. Opens up the midfield for McGinn, Grealish, Hourihane to bomb forward. They all had good games. Slightly tarnished by the stupid Mings error at the end of the game, which is a bit of a minor annoyance, but never mind. Engels with a slight injury, but potentially should be okay. 3 points. Thank you very much. Good night.
There you go. Very good. Very good. Thank you for that. Right, that sets up the rest of the show. That's for those people who just can't get through 10 minutes without the mention of Aston Villa. But anyway, we'll discuss the Norwich game in full force coming up shortly. Right, first of all, 3 points. Well, this week saw finally the long-awaited government review on standing. Going back to last year, this is something, after more pressure on Tracy Crouch, the then sports minister, basically, this is the first time that the government have actually opened up the discussion since 1989 on standing in stadiums. So essentially now, the report's out there. I think I put it out on social media. Basically, they just want robust evidence to suggest that rail seats and safe standing will improve spectator safety. So that's a challenge, really. And I think they're very open to trials now. So this is something, obviously, Wolves and Spurs have moved in position with by future fitting rail seats. Mm. And there's an opportunity there for Aston Villa to step up, because initially they were one of the first Premier League clubs, when they were a Premier League club, who basically put their hat in the ring for it and suggested they would do a trial. But it'd be interesting to see if the current establishment at the club will step forward as well, because the last few owners have been 100% behind it. So we'll see what happens. I mean, the upshot is it's the government basically saying prove it safe and it shall be. So, you know, more bureaucracy, and obviously there's going to be a bit of a wait, but at least there's a path now and you can see how progress can take place. Point number two. This has been a weekly occurrence. We go back to Iran to find out some good news, as our sisters in Iran have a positive outcome. Mr. Dan Rogers, you are our Iranian correspondent. So please regale the good news.
So this is the very good news, I suppose, after pressure from international policy pressure from this podcast that... and after FIFA came out and basically strong-armed Iran to let women into the upcoming World Cup qualifiers, and they've released 3,500 tickets for women to attend the upcoming Cambodia game. All those tickets have been snapped up, and these things don't come without their caveats, so I suppose that it's important for me to say that these women have to sit in a designated female section. Not quite sure what that looks like. But this is I think, a necessary and an important step after the tragic death of Sahar Qadiari, who died having set herself alight in protest of these archaic and backward laws in Iran.
Well, she got a prison sentence, or she was facing a prison sentence.
She was facing 6 months imprisonment for impersonating a man trying to enter an Iranian game, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, at least her death has not been in vain. But it's, I mean, it's sad it has to actually get to that. But I think FIFA are sending a task force to make sure that this actually goes to plan.
It's an important issue.
Right, meanwhile, point number three. We used to talk about points that have nothing to do with football and relate them to football. So this is a bit of an old school 3 points. Japan Airlines have introduced a seat map, which shows you where a baby will be seated on your flight. It's always one of those pet hates that come out when you get on a flight. A lot of people don't want to be next to kids.
I mean, I have kids and I try not to be next to them.
But, you know, it's also a thing that there's not much empathy with people, is there, when they see a kid and it's not theirs. It's like, get it away from me. When you think about it now, I mean, even when you get away tickets, let's relate this to Aston Villa. On away tickets, you can see the seat plan now. On a home ticket, if you're a season ticket holder, you know where you're sitting anyway. But if you're buying a seat ad hoc for the game, wouldn't it be good if there was warnings on who is around you? For example, maybe they could like have a colour code for the cunt in front or the twat at the back.
You need to watch the anti-Semite on the right.
Or, you know, maybe a colour code for fans that might be singing racist songs as well.
Or when you go away from home, you could have the nightmare with a flare. Because everyone wants pyrotechnics off the back of their head, don't they?
Probably won't be putting that on a T-shirt, to be honest, Chris.
nice rhyming couplet, though.
Thanks, mate.
It also would be handier on Villa Park seating plans for games like Liverpool or Manchester United. Where
spot the Scouser.
Yeah, where it would highlight in the halt if there's a Scouser sitting next to you or a Manx who's...
They're never Manx, David. We all know this. They're always Cockneys.
I notice on the categories for the Liverpool tickets that it's not just claret members for the first choice. It's one game booking history and claret members. So you've got to be a claret member with one game, and that's since 2017. It's loose.
16-17.
Yeah, 16-17. But it's basically an anti-Scouser provision. It's basically to stop Scousers suddenly buying, you know, when I say Scousers, I mean Liverpool fans. I'm using a broad term to describe Liverpool fans. They don't have to necessarily derive from Liverpool, but it's basically to prevent Liverpool fans, you know, getting tickets in the home end. But maybe they've been planning ahead. Maybe they've, you know, thought, well, you know, Villa are going to get promoted in at least 3 seasons, so I'm going to go to one of their home games just so I've got booking history.
I don't know anyone who bought a membership for another club just to get a ticket for an away game before.
But it's it's a classic trick. I mean, I've pulled it. I don't mind admitting it, that you have to buy a membership to guarantee a seat. So that's why they're having the plus one game routine. Anyway, before we crack on with the Villa-Norwich game, the victorious 5-0. Mings, what did you do, boy? That's what I wanted to say. I wanted to say 5-0, not 5-1. Anyway, just a quick shout out to the good villains that make this possible. The My Old Man Said patrons. Want to first of all give a big shout out to Prince George for signing up after the Norwich game. Also, Thomas Linton, Jake Chin, Daniel Wayne, Alex Moland, and Nathan Evans. I was just starting to slow down there. I was just making sure there wasn't any made up names in this one.
No, I didn't get there in time.
But thank you very much. You all have access now to the anti-preview. And there's another show that once we get on a roll, hopefully that will come out weekly as well, or at least fortnightly. But yeah, please do, if you're thinking of supporting the show, which will be much appreciated. It gets us through these dark nights, the depression of having to sit around editing this. Anyway, thank you very much. If you want to join it, please go to the myomansaid.com website and click on the Patreon link, and all the information will be there. Any questions, get in touch. Also, if you're on Facebook and you want an easy life and you want to do it all within Facebook, you can become a Facebook supporter as well. Just on the Facebook page of My Old Man Said, you'll see the supporter button. Just press that for more details. Right. On to Norwich. Norwich City 1, Aston Villa 5.
Ooh.
Smith, same team. I was trying to work out if I was surprised. I was expecting Wesley to play. I mean, I think that was a load of bollocks. Suddenly people are calling for Keenan Davis, and you're just thinking, yeah, as soon as Keenan Davis doesn't score in his first game, he's going to be the next scapegoat. With Wesley, it was just a case of you've got to play to him, as we've said. You've got to get midfielders further up the pitch, and so I expected him to play. I mean, as you know, we you know what we said about him in the last episode, and it's about his attitude, about less time focused on diving and crying dying. And dying, literally dying, and more focused on being that, you know, using your strength and being a thorn in the opposition side. Norwich, obviously a lot of talk about them having 9 to 10 players out, which we were obviously constantly reminded of. But, you know, as people have pointed out on social media, when you look at the team that started against Villa compared to the one where Norwich beat Manchester City 3-2, there's only 3 differences in there. I think, was Tim Krul one of them, the goalkeeper? But I thought McGovern had a decent enough game. He kept the score down, if anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously they've got some, you know, their defence is, I mean, I think their forward line's pretty much their first team selection, isn't it? Pookie and the boys up front.
Stapleman and people like that. Yeah, these are still starting.
Yeah, it's mainly
players.
Their defence. And I think Smith sensed that, and that's why he just basically pushed people. And finally, they worked out,
for the kill.
You get midfielders in the box. I mean, it was completely different. If you took a picture of how Villa were attacking in this game and overlaid it in terms of from the games that they, you know, the last 7 games, you'll find 2 or 3 extra players in the box in this Norwich game.
And I think key to that was actually the thing you mentioned slightly earlier, which was that we provided some service to Wesley, you know, that the guy wasn't starved of oxygen up front. He actually saw the ball.
And I think a lot of that was Target getting up there. And suddenly, it's almost like the midfield can click into a gear because they've got an extra option on that left-hand side.
Yeah, there's a real feel of balance coming now. I mean, there was glimpses of it for about 45, 50 minutes against Burnley, where you thought, oh, okay, you can see now how Smith wants this team to set up. Target makes a huge difference for me. I'm not going to say he's the key man because he's not, but in terms of the difference he makes to the dynamic overall of how he gets the best out of the better players, having him there where he can push on means you can now play a five-man midfield when you've got the ball and you can be more solid without the ball.
And I thought that was reflected on the right side as well, that though Gilbert, for me, isn't necessarily the best defensive, you know, he's like Target, his ability to get into an advanced midfield role, it's an overlap, isn't it? And it's very, very difficult to, especially if you switch the players we did a few times, that you can almost allow for the fact that, you know, we might be on the chase sometimes. And that did happen against Norwich, where I think Gilbert was recovering a few times, and same for Target. But it makes it a completely different proposition because it frees those midfielders to, as Hourihane did to good effect, actually found himself in and around the box, and you start winning penalties, you start picking up the scraps, and what can we say? That we were right all along, and finally Smith's listened to this podcast and put into place.
I mean, we've said it previously about sort of Wesley, and that give the guy some credit when he's actually been put in front of goal for the most part. From what we've seen of him, he's actually it's been reasonably clinical. You know, obviously first finish is excellent. I think the second one he should score, but he does. It's very similar to the Arsenal goal. If you give him chances that way, you know, give him good service, I think he's going to score goals.
I think he had 6 shots in this game, and only one of them wasn't on target.
And the key, you know, for the penalty, the keeper makes a cracking save. He should probably react faster to the rebound and bury it, but these things happen. I'm not going to be.
I mean, the keeper that made a great save on the rebound as well. To be honest, he got he got like the top of his forehead to it or something.
I'd have scalped him.
It's one of those games where all the key pieces in our puzzle, they all clicked and they all influenced the game. It wasn't like one person ran the show. They all got involved. McGinn had some fantastic touches. There's the little flick down the corner. He sends the Norwich guy down the road. It's just incredible. I thought El Ghazi, you know, again, you know, he should have scored when he hits the woodwork, and he gets 2 assists. You know, they've all had end product.
There's some consistency issues, isn't there? That El Ghazi's one I'd single out for that he had a fantastic. It was a great performance against Norwich overall. I'd just like to see that on a run of maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 games where he's unplayable, because I think when he's in the mood, El Ghazi does look an absolute snip. But if he's moody or if it's not coming off for him, you can almost see why he had to come down to us in the Championship and whatnot, can't you?
Yeah. I think we said it before about him, didn't we, with El Ghazi. You know, he's a very good player when everything's rosy, and that the kind of game at Norwich was the perfect game for him, where he would have got the sense quite early on, I'm in the game here. I'm going to get a lot of the ball, and I can be really positive. And when you're 2-0 up, it's very easy to sort of start being a little bit more adventurous.
I mean, a similar thing can be levelled at Wesley. This, I mean, if you want to call it like fair weather player, where it's, if it's going roses, then, you know, they're at it and they play with belief. But when it's, you know, when they have to tough it out, because we're going to need Wesley. If we're playing, you know, the likes of Liverpool, Manchester City, Manchester United, like we used to say about Benteke, where, well, I would say about Benteke, with Benteke, you got a chance against anybody. So you need him mentally to be on tune that he's going to fight and fight and fight and fight, because he's, you know, he's got the strength, etc., to trouble any defence if he applies himself. On that penalty, just on an aside, I have this thing about short run-ups. I thought he was going to miss it as soon as he stepped up for that
slow one, wasn't it? It was just, he never quite fancied him.
Yeah, because he did that in pre-season, and I was thinking, oh, he's one of these with his short run-up, and he buried it in the top-hand corner, and he thought, oh, okay, he's Brazilian, fair enough. He's got an advanced way of taking penalties that
advanced, yes.
My like have not ever seen. And so when he started to do his little short stroll against Norwich, I thought, okay, here we go, something, this is going to be, and then I thought, there's more pressure. I mean, that was a friendly, that's a friendly against nobody, isn't it?
This is like proper...
Yeah, he telegraphed it completely. Yeah,
I thought it was a well struck penalty, but it was a bit close to the goalkeeper, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, what you mentioned about him planting in the top corner, we have actually got another Brazilian who came on and
showed him how to do it.
It's just reminded him
what a goal.
For a player we've bought as a DM, that boy can shoot, can't he? That is.
Well, I've got a feeling that that's going to be his party trick. I think Nakamba's the man, isn't he, at the moment?
I mean, he had a superb game and continues to get better every time he steps on the field.
I mean, he's mobile, yes. He gets around, he fills the pockets and the space, and he just cuts them off, doesn't he?
It's actually very exciting to have an array of options across the midfield, and they're starting to get a bit of a flavour, I think, of what people's roles are. This is the advantage I think we've got over the Norwiches in the division, that we've got the ability to have a different style of play. We can adapt, and actually we can absorb if we get injuries. We've got some strength in depth, finally, and I think that there's also the opportunity where in-game we can switch it up a gear, and that's why I think having players like El Ghazi and some of the supporting cast members, if you like, ticking over consistently, is it players like Luiz and Nakamba are actually quite cultured footballers and can bring a lot to it too. They're not just, right, like this is a bit of a slight on Whelan, but you just had to drop him in front of the defence and he was quite, you know what I mean?
There's a bit more dimension. To them.
And that's the real positive that, and the frustration I think that we'd had in recent weeks is that we knew we had the potential to be more expansive and to actually release ourselves into the final third. It doesn't surprise me at all that it converted into all the goals that it did, and it could have been a lot more, you know, because the opportunities were really flowing.
But going back to the, let's say, the first quarter of the game, or even first third, it seemed like it was going to be a high scoring from both teams, because Villa were pretty open. It was just Mings is almost playing like a sweeper. I mean, at times he's keeping them onside, but he's kind of doing that because he's got this on position corners. He's got this free role where his role is to attack the ball. He's not marking. Mm. He attacks the ball.
Yeah.
Wherever the ball goes, he's on it. And then he's quite deep. I mean, he kept them onside two or three times, but it's because he's playing the last line of defence, man. Mm. It's almost like a sweeper, but obviously he's not playing behind two centre-backs. But it's quite an interesting role. He is like the mountain. If you get through the defence, you've got to get past him. He's like the last man.
Mm.
He makes Heaton's life a lot easier, apart from when he just has a collapse in concentration at the end.
Kicks it into the sky.
That's a pretty shambolic consolation, but we'll put that to one side.
But in terms of blocking and everything, he was everywhere.
And we give him all the credit for, you know, his heading ability, his blocking. You know, he's a proper defender. But then you put him on the ball, and he can play.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, in terms of, you know, we said it numerous times, what England lack at the back. When you compare him to a Harry Maguire, who's supposedly a £70 million player, and in terms of footballing ability, Mings just cleans up in terms of a more rounded player.
To give it a bit of context, his gaffe at the end is not necessarily a bad thing. I remember Villa when it was live on TV as well. I think there was like 20,000 at Villa Park when we played Everton live on TV and beat them 6-2, and we were 6-0 up. And then I think Paul McGrath scored an own goal, and you thought, ah. And then they scored another one, and you thought, ah, 6-2. go on then. But yeah, so if McGrath did it, then if, you know, we can forgive Mings, because I think Mings is heading that way of being a massive influence on this team's potential going forward.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The funny thing about the Norwich goal, or their consolation goal to give it its official title, was the scorer running into the net to pick up the ball to kind of run it back. We're still in this, boys.
Come on, lads. Four to go.
Come on, lads. Poor old chap.
And then followed by goal music. Consolation goals getting goal music. Greeted by a barrage of sarcasm from the away end. Bless them.
Just to round it off on Mings, there was a couple of interesting videos from some Norwich vloggers that they make some references to Mings as though, and it actually shows you the ignorance of some fans, actually, that he is, as Chris was saying, a much more rounded footballer than he's given credit for. And I think, you know, you mentioned England as well, Dave, and he's far more cultured than two or three of the players who I think are in that mix of England at the moment. And
yeah.
I think there's another level to be attained for Mings that I think he's reached this perhaps pinnacle of his career. Or this part of his career, and he's, because his work ethic is fantastic. He doesn't waste much, but physically he's very, very, very imposing for attackers, and not a lot gets past him. And I think if he could iron out, yeah, it's a weird example with the Norwich game, but I think if he could iron out some of those unforced errors sometimes, and this is Villa as a whole, as much as it's Mings, I think he really does become the complete defender for us. And as you say, carries that talismanic type.
Because I think in the early stages of that game, there's no way that game's won by 4 goals. Norwich could have had a couple of goals before the half-time whistle blew, so it could have changed the dynamic of the game completely.
Mm. I mean, they're lively going forward, Norwich. You know, they're not
yeah,
a bad
very
side.
Lively.
You know, they've got, as Aaron's, the fullback, is a very good player, and they play good football, and they got at Villa and they tried to have a go. I think Villa just got the goals just at the right time, so when they sort of, and they managed, you know, the third goal, you know, and Grealish buries it, and it's a brilliantly constructed goal. That kills the game as a contest, ultimately.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I think at 2-0, to be honest, I think Smith would have been pretty much saying the same, that if we get a third here, it's a walk in the park. And from then on, it kind of was. But it was great to see them actually get the third and go, do you know what? We're going to go in for the kill here. Because a lot of times, Villa in recent years would have gone 3-0, great. And then we'd have been boring for the next 30, 35 minutes.
Yeah.
The fact that we actually had another gear to go into, and then the guys who came off the bench all influenced the game.
We didn't try and walk the ball in either. I mean, the final 3 goals were all from over 20 yards or on the D. On the D. I think you'd have to go some way back to find an example of three Villa midfielders in Grealish, Hourihane and Luiz scoring outside the box in one game or even shooting. You know, we used to go long periods under Bruce where we wouldn't have a shot, let alone from outside the box. And you think, you know, it's a bit of a, it's a positive for Smith, really, that, you know, we're going into a run of games now where obviously we've got Brighton coming up next and a number of far sterner tests where it gives you some confidence that if we get opportunities in the game, that people will have the confidence to unleash. You know, and you never know what you can achieve, as Wolves showed at Manchester City.
I think, yeah, I mean, linking it to Wolves, I think the 5-1 result is big in itself, but just as a small little extra on top for the win, it became a slightly
bigger result. A cherry.
Yeah, it was very much a cherry on top, because when you looked at the results over the weekend, with, I don't think Villa would have been expected by the neutrals to go to Norwich and win. Newcastle had beaten United. Wolves beat Man City.
I can't believe that.
There's been some pretty crazy results over the weekend. So actually, Villa are fortunate, because if they'd have gone to Carrow Road and lost, with Newcastle, Brighton and Wolves all winning unexpectedly, Villa's table position could have been a bit grim, just psychologically. So to psychologically get the big win, you know, they've got the away hoodoo. What was it? Something like 1,500 days and 22 attempts for an away win in the Premier League. Which is staggering, really. Admittedly, obviously, we weren't there for 3 years. But
yeah, I mean, that's, those statistics are always a bit silly when there's a big three-year gap in there.
But I think the point's important that Chris is making, that really it's about, you know, I thought we were in a bit of a false position. But on the other hand, you have to, with a number of Premier League games that have gone, you almost have to think, well, the table doesn't lie, does it? You get what you deserve a lot of the time.
Exactly.
I think it links into something else that David said a few podcasts ago as well, especially when we'd been dropping, I think it was 8 points from winning positions before Norwich, which was that, looking at some of the results, I mean, just this weekend, you know, we've just reeled off some what I consider to be quite strange results. And I've watched more Premier League football in the last, 2 months than I have in 3 years, admittedly. But this is a division that I think if you could get some traction in, there's not a lot of teams firing on all four cylinders for me.
I agree.
You know, you take the mental side of it. Liverpool now, I mean, I told you before we started this season that Liverpool have fired up. They're ultra focused, because they know if you can go a season and only get beat once and win the Champions League, you're good enough to win the title. And it's their primary focus. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool won the league and City win the Champions League, because it's going to come a point where they'll realise that we can't win this fucking league. So let's concentrate on the Champions League. So suddenly they're concentrating on the Champions League, and, you know, Villa play Manchester City. I mean, this is going to be sampled when we get beat 8-0. But it's, you know, their intensity's down. They're not chasing for the league title. So the league games are not as important. And then their focus isn't as strong as it would be. And, you know, the teams that are fighting third and fourth, they're going to be able to drop points and still get in the third and fourth spot.
I mean, think that might be a
that's why Leicester have got a chance of getting in there. You know, even teams like Wolves, if they get their act together.
I think that so far has been kind of the theme of the season, in that you've obviously got City and Liverpool, who really have got their house in order. But then you've got a lot of the big boys, your sort of United, Chelsea's, Arsenal, Spurs to a certain extent. They're all in transition. I mean, Spurs, I think, are about to be in transition, if I'm honest. But they've got three of these big teams who would normally, that top six would be a closed shop.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you've got Leicester come into the party, who are well organised. They've kept their team together from the last couple of years. You know, Wolves having Europe might affect them slightly. And then we've said it numerous times, you look at really the bottom sort of 12 teams. I mean, the fact that Everton, you'd have said, would have been, with the money they spent, would have been odds on to finish 7th or 8th, and they're currently in the bottom three and look fucking dreadful. It could be just a really wide open season.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that Newcastle, under Steve Bruce, have beaten both Spurs and Manchester United already. I mean, this is what I was saying, I think, in the last episode. Well, and the ones before that, obviously, you just got to take your opportunity in game. If you got to get, it doesn't matter who you're playing, you've got to do it. And because other teams are, you know, they're taking scalps left, right, and centre. So hopefully, this Norwich game will give them the belief that they can, you know, finally execute teams and get the 3 points. Because I'm looking forward to, like, when Villa play Wolves, I think you'll see two teams going toe to toe attacking. You know, it should be a spectacle, you know, whatever the score is in the end.
Well, you'd like to think, with, you know, a team like Liverpool coming to Villa Park, I'd really, having not had it last season, I wouldn't have said, because the pressure was on, I'd be really excited to see this Villa team play a team kind of with very little expectation. I don't think many will expect Villa to turn up and turn Liverpool over, but it might be a
Apart from me.
But potentially...
It's a soundbite right there.
Potentially taking the shackles off them, and Smith just saying, just go and have a go. Might suit them really well.
I'm going to set myself up for a soundbite now, because this will probably sound a bit contradictory. I do think Liverpool are playing better than they were playing last season. They've seemed to have, as Dave said, that they're so uber focused on not having, I think, a repeat of last term. But
well, they didn't do anything wrong last term. They did absolutely nothing wrong apart from lose one game.
They didn't, but that's the point that I'm making, that they've gone into like this uber focused, uber streamlined, single mindedness this term over and above that. But this season, they have had already some generous decisions going in their way. And no team's infallible either. That, you know,
I mean, they only won the last game with the last minute penalty.
Well,
and I think VAR can strike any team at any time.
Yes, yeah. as we know all too well.
Yeah, I just want to go into that game. You know, obviously with a few more points on the board, knowing that you've got a chance to, you know, have a go at them.
And, I mean, I think aside from the City and the Liverpool games, you look at what's sort of on the reasonably immediate horizon with kind of, you know, we've got a trip to Wolves, I believe, in November. There's obviously Newcastle to come to Villa Park soon, which is an important game for Villa.
Get your potatoes.
Yeah, you know, Brighton at home. I think Brighton at home is a really important one. Brighton and Newcastle is a really important game, especially knowing you've got to play City, Liverpool, Wolves and United around them.
But the difference is that this time round, we are competitive, and, you know, in the years of Premiership malaise that we found ourselves in before, and this was one of the huge benefits, I think, of getting down, and you had that huge clear out and false starts left, right and centre. But as you were just saying, really, that we're not going into a game like Liverpool hoping for a draw. We've actually got, I wouldn't say expectation, but we've got the ability to cause an upset, and I think we would try to do that.
Yeah, weirdly enough, this team, obviously, if it continues to progress, it's more as likely to get a win as it is to get a draw and a defeat. It's almost, it's kind of a flip a coin type routine
against
anybody.
You know, this team will go down fighting. You know, they won't be 4-0 down after 50 minutes with a half empty stadium and everyone's
there's
going,
another soundbite.
You know, when we're having this podcast on the steps of the Holt End and we're 4-0 down after 20 minutes and we've left.
And we've walked out and we're all stood at the train
station.
Out the door at four. Yeah, I think we should introduce that campaign before the Liverpool game. Out the door at four. If we go 4-0 down, we're all out.
It's just all going to town at half time. I mean, I think I buggered off at 4-0 in the last time that Liverpool came.
Seriously, I think we're going to have a go. And if they're still 100% when they come to Villa Park, we may be a threat to that.
We came close against Arsenal, we came close against Spurs, but it would be great in the not too distant future to really put a marker down and make a big statement. And traditionally, even when we were shit, really bad side under sort of Lambert, I remember we turn over, I think the season we turn over Chelsea at home one year, we had Man City the same season, we'd turn them over.
We were Chelsea's bogey team for a couple of seasons.
I remember the famous Delph.
Mourinho could never beat us at Villa Park.
No.
And there was the 3-2 win against San City. So even when we were dreadful, we'd still get a couple of scalps for the season. And this was a bad Villa team.
Right. I mean, it was all good. All positive vibes. I mean, I think the Prince George, if everybody's seen the video of that, especially the second part where he's just freaking out, he's going mad.
It's proper royal limbs, isn't it?
Then he transitioned, give it royal limbs, there's a new saying. Then he transitioned into polite, stately applause. That was quite funny. But I didn't know he'd been converted to a villain so quickly. I was quite surprised.
Good lad.
The Villa force is strong in that family, and I see there's another as well. Is it Charlotte?
Yeah, it's a full family trip, wasn't it?
Yeah, she was there. She'll be turning to the Villa side soon. But the only thing that put a dampener on the weekend was this video that floated around the Nakamba song. I mean, there's a few Nakamba songs, but this is the racist version. I mean, the Esri Konsa one went out, but then, you know, it's just one reference and you're just thinking, well, you know, it's just dumb people not really knowing what they're saying. And, you know, they're thinking, you know, they're being funny, you know, and they're not intentionally being racist. It's just the way it comes out. There was the Black Tammy one, which is another case of people thinking they're clever, not really realizing the context. But in this Nakamba one, when you've strung together three, which are race related slurs, it's just, I'm sorry, three strikes and you're out. You know, you've got to call that out. I mean, if you haven't heard it, it's basically Marvelous Nakamba, I'm not singing it in rhyme. Marvelous Nakamba, his dad's a Rasta, McGinn's his master, his cock's fucking massive. When you manage to get crowbar in slavery in there as well, it's a connotation to slavery. It's like,
I think, I mean, it's all wrong. I mean, you know, it doesn't take me or anyone else to, I think, necessarily sit here or online and do that. I think that the bigger issue is that it just can't, it just needs to stop happening. And there needs to be some self-policing on the concourse, really.
I mean, you know, young lads should know better, but it's a thing of education. Correct me if I'm wrong, out people out there may know more about them than I do, but, you know, kick it out. To me, it's just telling people this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. Wearing a t-shirt saying kick it out, hashtag kick it out. I mean, this is funded by, you know, the Premier League, FA, etc. But I want to know more about their educational element. What are people doing to connect with people on the, you know, concourses and say, look, this is out of order and it's offensive to the people it portrays in it?
Well, yeah, the players who are pulling on the shirt for us at the end of the day. I think it's racism masked in what some sort of perceived humour, which I find really bizarre. You know, this is, yeah, and that's the uncomfortable bit for me, that this song in particular, it shows it's not a level of ignorance. It's actually there's well, one reference in particular is a blatant slavery reference, you know, and it's not cool at all, really. And I think that if it gets masked under this banter notion, when, you know, just because it isn't like some of the really, really outrageous racist abuse that you see, that we've seen even this season in Syria, you know, Lukaku suffered some terrible racist abuse just recently. Just because it's not like that, then it's okay and it's confined to a few people. But I think if it's normalised and it's accepted, and as you say, three or four times now where it hasn't really been dealt with.
And this is a club responsibility as well. And there's another thing that's insulting is when dumb people think they're clever and they're not, that's just insulting as well.
One of the big things that, as well, when you mention it, and I know all of us mentioned it on Twitter after the game and got varying degrees of answers from different people. And when people come back and condone what they're doing by saying, oh, don't be a snowflake, and you kind of think, oh, wow, okay, this is pretty deep-rooted in the psyche. And as well, I mean, to add my little sixpence, what is the obsession with teenage lads in the Villa away end and black dicks?
Yeah,
it's, like, well, it's a bit fucking weird.
It is weird.
And aside from anything else, putting my sixpence in, it's kind of like, as someone who works in music for a living, aside from anything else, the racism, it's a fucking shit song. It's rubbish. It's just a crap chant.
Yeah.
Like, come on, be creative. Like, I mean, we've basically ripped off pretty much every other club's songs bar Yippee-Ai-Yay and My Old Man anyway. So it's kind of like, come on, do something genuinely
and
witty.
My Old Man was used, it's used by Arsenal and Manchester. I mean, part of the reason I set My Old Man up and took the name was to claim it 100% for Villa.
It's not, you know, it's not particularly witty. And there's been, I mean, I've been in the whole tender on numerous occasions and to away grounds. And generally speaking, our fan base, and I think it's generally a Midlands thing, because to be fair to the Blues, they're the same. They're quite a witty bunch. And you think, where is this? This is just, it's crap humour.
It's inane, isn't it?
It's inane. It's like a bunch of 12-year-olds. Behavior. Yeah, it's just like, let's just make up any old song that everyone else is singing and just shoehorn a load of words in. It's just like, come on. I mean, Norwich is a fucking long journey. You've got at least 3.5, 4 hours to get there. That's 4 hours of drinking time on the coach. Think about it a bit.
Take a fucking notepad and pencil and come up with some better tunes.
Give someone a guitar. But when it comes down, and it comes down to the nitty gritty, it's just not funny.
Nah.
Yeah. But no, but it's not. This isn't virtue signalling and any of that bullshit. This is just like sane, reasonably intelligent people saying that's just wrong. And if you went to court, there's only one winner in terms of proving whether it's racist or not. So, you know, it's simple as that. This is not little, you know, this, you know, three strikes in one song. I mean, come on. One, you can go, you know, naivety, toxic banter. But three, it's like, yeah, that's just not on. And if people hear it on the concourse, you got to shut it down, because the club won't do anything. And, you know, I'll have a word with the club about this in terms of educating rather than just saying, no, this is wrong. Because when you say something's wrong, the first thing you want to do is rebel against it.
Or just, you know, treat them in the way that they'll listen to. Just get Grealish to be very public and go, lads, you're being dicks. Shut up. Not like Nancy around with it and be like, you know, oh, we need to send out a load of pamphlets
Anyway, we will see what happens in terms of that, but it can't go on. It's just not on. Do we need to say anything else about the Norwich game? I mean, there is that. You can take away the fact we're, you know, it's one win and we're going in the right direction now, but we are far, far from out the woods. Oh, it's the international break now, so we can relax. We don't have to talk about Brighton and what they're up to.
We're off to Iran.
We're off to Iran. See you later. Actually, I thought this would be a bit more wilder, but we don't know. We're still a bit confused when we win games, so we'll work that one out over the international break.
I think we've kind of we'd call it like we're about par for the course, because we kind of expected to beat Burnley and go to Norwich and win, so we're kind of par for the course for the week. And I'm still pissed off about the Arsenal result.
Yeah, I am still. That's that one rat. Because, you know, the first thing I did when we beat Norwich was I thought, okay, so what happens if we got those 2 points against West Ham and the three that we should have
exactly
got against Arsenal?
Same.
Oh, fuck, we're in the Champions League places.
Yeah.
That was before the last batch of games. I haven't worked it out on the most recent table.
Because I did the same, and I was being reasonably conservative, and I'd said, you know, if we'd have got a point at Spurs, a point against Bournemouth, a point at Palace, even a point at Arsenal.
No, we should 3 points Arsenal, come on.
Even
ten,
if we've been conservative,
ten fucking
though,
men.
We could 10 fucking men
at half time, 1-0 up, you've got to win that fucker.
Yeah, what you're saying is when Liverpool should be coming to Villa Park for the top of the table clash.
Yeah.
We could very easily, by not being, we've said this so many times, but by not being a heck of a lot better, we could be 4-6 points better off and have clear daylight between us and the bottom three.
Yeah,
which in
we've
the
only got about 1 point
things,
at the moment.
That is the plan.
Yeah,
you know, as I said earlier, it becomes a big win when you look at the other results around us.
It was a big win in terms of us getting stuck in some quicksand, I would venture.
Mm. Yeah.
Also a good win because it does address the goal difference. I mean, if you look around us, especially below us at the moment, there's. I mean, if you're looking for clues how the season's going to pan out, and you see teams with like -7, -8, -11 goal differences already after not a lot of games, and Villa's, I think it's +1 at the moment.
My observation of some of the other teams I've seen play so far, and I see a lot of teams who are playing as we were when we got relegated, that they're set up to not lose, and that I think plays to our advantage.
Yeah, I agree.
No, exactly. We're not going down, but if we are, we're going down fighting, and I think we're going to win more because we've got solid enough defence as well.
Proactive teams generally get rewarded in this division.
Yeah. Right, on that note, please do subscribe on whatever vehicle you are listening to this show on, whether it be Spotify, Apple, or one of the many podcast apps. Please do join the Mad Few Facebook group if you want to converse throughout the week regarding topics that we've mentioned and flag other things up for our consideration. Any final words, gentlemen, as we slip off into the night?
Onwards and upwards, rightfully.
Right. Upwards and onwards and onwards and upwards. And on that note, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
Hogan did play and scored a last-minute winner.
What?
As Stoke somehow managed to beat Swansea, who I think they were top. Swansea were top, were they not, before the game?
They were.
Crazy.
2-1 away from home. Scott Hogan came on in the 64th minute and changed the game.
Wow.
Do you know how many touches he had?
10.
One.
Second. Go on then, quick
minute. No.
This is like a five-a-side game. Next guess, Chris Budd.
8.
7.
Third go.
Wow. It's got to be more than any. 12?
13.
Rogers wins. It was 6. It was 6. So your 7 was the closest one.
Oh, Chris, you are a Tyrone Mings back pass, buddy.
That was just a friendly game, but you still the same outcome.
It's never a friendly.
Could you play the consolation music, please?
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.